This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez and Melissa Idris with the top business
Melissa
news.
Melissa Idris.
With the top business news of the day. Just to shout out to Nick Hasuddin, who tweeted in following the Breakfast Grill. He says, not being able to diagnose your sickness does not make you healthy. Oh, sorry, being able to diagnose your sickness does not make you healthy, he says. Slightly enigmatic. Nick Hasuddin, maybe you'd like to elaborate on that. Thank you all for all your comments on WhatsApp and Twitter. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now it's time to look at some stories that we have. All about them are about earnings. Axiata Group has just announced its results for the financial year ending December last year. It looks like it's been a good year for them. Melissa, what are the key numbers that we should be paying attention to in this story?
Right. If you look at revenue, it was up 13% to 24 million ringgit. In 2016, it was about 21.5 million ringgit. EBITDA was up 15% to 9.2 and profit after 9.2 billion, that is, and profit after tax improved by about 77% to 1.2 billion ringgit compared to 2016. So all in all, if you looked at the breakdown, you would see that Celcom posted encouraging service revenue trend, and also their XL, which is so Celcom and XL, their two largest operations. XL also posted a strong set of fourth quarter results. EBITDA was up quite a robust 8% quarter on quarter, and a even more robust 38% year on year, all this on lower OPEX. However, what was interesting was XL's core net profit jumped 80% quarter on quarter, and that meant that they were able to contribute a lot more to the group earnings. Their contribution climbed 110% quarter on quarter to 63 million ringgit.
Yeah, so also one of the things that is interesting in terms of these numbers is this. He talked about Celcom having improved performance. He's talked about the turnaround efforts happening and moving in a positive direction. But in terms of market share and the reality of the situation on the battleground is actually this. Celcom has been losing market share over the last year. In the third quarter of last year, for example, Celcom had 9.7 million subscribers, down from 9.93 million subscribers in the previous quarter. And in quarter one, they actually had 10.25 million subscribers. So they've been losing market share as well. So besides the downward trend in subscribers, they have gone from 30.29% to well under 30%. In fact, 29% compared to their competitors.
I'm wondering if this is fueling rumours. Apparently, there are rumours abounded of a possible re-merger of Celcom and Telekom Malaysia. Tan Sri Jamaluddin Ibrahim has denied any ongoing re-merger talks. He says currently Celcom Axiata is only interested in a collaboration with Telekom. Here's the President and Group CEO, Tan Sri Jamaluddin.
We demerged for a reason, and that factors behind the demerger still apply. But we have decided to do a collaboration plan that we will piggyback on their fixed line. They will piggyback on our mobile infrastructure. That is doing reasonably well. But after we completed the agreement, the market structure changed again, right? Price have gone down for both sides. So right now, as we speak, it's being renegotiated.
That was Axiata President and Group CEO Tan Sri Jamaluddin Ibrahim.
Yeah, so if you remember, Sharad, this news of a possible merger between Telecom and Axiata, it emerged months ago. I think it was some nine months ago. And since then, both companies have come out to deny it. If you remember, they had a demerger back in 2008. So the question is, why would they come back and re-merge, so to speak? But analysts are saying that this industry is so crowded that consolidation is the only way forward. And therefore, you can't help but feel rumours and see which companies have the most synergy or the most to gain through consolidation. So whether or not, according to Tan Sri Jamaluddin, this is not on the cards for Axiata. But for the rest of the industry, we don't know. It could still be the tone where consolidation could be the flavour.
You know, politicians have an interesting way of denying, say, rifts between them until the actually does emerge that there was a rift. You know?
I have to say the Australian political scene right now between the Prime Minister and the Vice Prime Minister is the Deputy Prime Minister is very interesting. Is so good, so good.
Okay. Now, India has been a bright spot for Axiata in the past, but they're experiencing challenges now. Brian?
Yeah, so Tan Sri Jamaluddin said that India posted a 450 million loss to the group compared to a 65 million profit the previous year. Now, this is in the face of significant competitive disruption in the country itself.
Okay, so we actually have a clip from him. That is Tan Sri Jamaluddin Ibrahim.
India has been the best performing companies for many years in a row in India among the 12 competitors. However, last year was one year where Jio, which is now recorded as the one of the biggest events in the history of mobile industry globally, has completely destroyed the market. You probably have heard at least two companies have declared bankruptcy, although one or two others completely given up in India. We do not have control over India. It's not a subsidiary. It's an associate company. We don't have control over management and all that.
That was Axiata President and Group CEO Tan Sri Jamaluddin Ibrahim.
Yeah, so one of the things, and he talked about Jio. Jio came into the market very aggressively, in fact, offering free plans within India itself. And that's completely disrupted the market, which is one of the reasons why several players in India have, in fact, gone bankrupt.
Yeah, but it's such an enticing market, you know, the how many billion population and such a smartphone savvy market. So really, I think telco players around the world are looking at India and saying, well, we can't not get in there. But once you get in there, it's so competitive, it's difficult. Spectrum allocation, there are issues with that. And trying to kind of carve out a little bit of market share for yourself is a lot harder than it seems. So, you know, it's so tempting, but whether they can do it is another matter. And I think Axiata is looking like this could be a bigger challenge than they expected.
Now, we also have earnings from Sime Darby and Sime Darby Plantations, the first since the demerger, and the subsequent listing of Sime Plantations and Sime Properties individually. Sime Darby's Berhad's second quarter net profit fell some 53% to 350 million ringgit, while quarterly revenue saw a 9% increase to some 8.8 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so the key highlights of it is really most of the operating segments actually posted increased profits, except for the motor division, which declined 83%. Now, that's due to losses of 109 million ringgit incurred in Vietnam. Now, if you strip out the Vietnam operations, profit on the quarter was just under 1% higher year on year. So the higher profit contributions came from China and Hong Kong. Lower profit contributions actually offset by lower profits in Malaysia and Singapore.
Over at Sime Darby Plantations, its net profit has risen some 34% to 429 million ringgit, while revenue grew 41% to about 4.1 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so if you remember, Sime Darby Plantation is a result of that demerger from Sime Darby, right? They spun off Sime Darby Plantation and Properties, and then they wanted to make like a pure play, three pure play entities. So everyone's looking at Sime Darby to see Sime Darby Plantations to see how well they did, and they did well because higher earnings from its upstream operations was apparently due to sales of palm products. But if you look at the cumulative 6 months, the net profit more than tripled to just under 1.5 billion ringgit. But the real reasons for the underlying performance of this was because they sold some land. So Sime Darby Plantation sold some land to Sime Darby Property for 676 million ringgit. And then there's also a one-off reversal of accruals of 95 million ringgit. So again, I'd like to see a longer-term trajectory, whether this is just, you know, kind of a spike in their earnings or whether this is something going forward will be continue to uptrend.
Well, there's also an Indian connection with Sime Darby. Apparently, they're moving forward to make an acquisition in India.
Yeah, so the company has submitted an expression of interest for India's largest edible oil manufacturer, Ruchi Soya Industries, which has a 19% market share in India. Their discussions, however, according to Tan Sri Mohammad Baki Saleh, the executive deputy chairman and managing director of Sime Darby Plantations, discussions are in a preliminary stage at this point of time.
So, I mean, it's interesting to see why they're interested in Ruchi, right? It's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. It's got a market cap of 5.5 billion ringgit. But at the moment, they're undergoing bankruptcy proceedings. DBS and Standard Chartered filed insolvency proceedings against Ruchi last year. However, Sime is not the only suitor for this company. Apparently, you've got Musim Mas from Indonesia also interested, as well as Cargill.
Now, that's not the only deal that's on the table at Sime Darby Plantations. It's also looking to reduce its stake in its 100% owned New Britain Palm Oil to between 51 to 60%, 3 years after taking control of the Papua New Guinea company.
Yeah, so Tan Sri Bakisale said that the ideal buyer would be a strategic investor from Papua New Guinea for a 40 to 49% stake in the business. Now, Sime Darby Plantations has been approached, according to him, by several funds, but it had not made any decisions yet. So let's recall that in March 2015, Sime Darby actually completed its acquisition of New Britain Palm Oil for about 5.8 billion ringgit. Now, that helped to bring its total land bank to over a million hectares spread out over five countries. And within Papua New Guinea itself, it added 135,000 hectares of land.
Now, our last story on earnings, Media Prima. It saw its second consecutive year of full-year net loss in 2017 amid high impairments as the group ramped up its kitchen sinking exercise towards the end of that year.
Yeah, so its full-year losses widened 11 times to about 650 million ringgit. If you compare that, it was just under 60 million ringgit in 2016. So that is a significant jump from 1 year to the next. And then I guess, you know, all in all, they did say, look, because of the poorer results, they're looking to accelerate their business transformation plan.
Yeah, so one of the things that they're also looking at is making strides in their digital business. Now, currently, most of their divisions, the television, radio, print and content creation divisions, all saw decline in revenue contributions. So given their digital transformation, they have seen some preliminary results. They've got some increase in conversions on their subscribers on the in their education portal. Tonton has seen revenue increases, higher registered users as well.
We're coming at the top of the hour. We'll be back after the bulletin with the opening numbers in the stock market and more analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.